We're going to have questions on the last half hour. But we request the friends to write their questions down. Write their questions down, and we'll have somebody collect them, like during the talk or perhaps even during some of the questions. So write, if you got any questions, write them down during the brother's talk here. It's a very interesting subject. We always felt that, I think the indication that the kingdom is getting close, or when the church perhaps will even be glorified, is if we keep our eyes on Israel. And I think this is the idea here also, that our eyes should be kept on Israel at all times, what's happening there. Israel has been in the news lately in the last few months, and the subject really fits. And our subject here is Israel Today, Regathering and Prophetic. Brother Paul. The Bible's found.
When the Jackson friends invited me to speak on the topic of Israel, naturally I was pleased and delighted and accepted quickly. But then they were quick to say, well, will you also answer some questions? I says, from Bible students? Then I was a little reluctant. It's a great presumption to think that we have all the answers to what's going on over there. And I don't have all the answers. But I accepted with the attitude that we're going to share with you what our thinking is. And if anything, merely to provoke your thinking. Because we are talking about Israel today, regathered, and we also are talking about Israel in the next maybe 5 to 15 years. I've said this before, and I think it's worth repeating. The action is in Israel. It's not in Disneyland in Orlando. Sorry, George. It's in Israel. And if Bible students have any kind of an orientation today, it's Israel. Now, we can give all kinds of reasons why, but I'll just sum it up in one word. Because we're Israelites. That's why. But we have to admit that in these last days, Israel has become God's time clock. It's a time clock that stopped ticking for many, many years, 2,520 years. And then suddenly it began to tick. It's ticking as if there's a deadline. Do you sense it? I do. It is like a countdown occurring. You know what a countdown is? You know, you remember those the Apollo projects and the space missiles?
Orlando.
There's some action down there. Like a countdown, friends. And I don't mean minutes or hours, but we can almost put it down in terms of years. Almost, I say. I mean, if I were to say to you, Jacob's trouble is another 500 years. You say, what? If I were to say to you, Jacob's trouble is 30 years, you'd say, ah, that's a little long. If I were to say, Jacob's trouble within 15 years, oh, maybe. And I think of late, if I say Jacob's trouble next year, you say, quite possibly, the way things are moving. So we're not talking.
talking about something way in the future. We're talking our generation. And so, the ticking as if there's a countdown. And I would then urge us as Bible students, watch Israel and you will see the hand of God. Watch Israel and you will see God deliver His people. And watch Israel and you will see the great miracle of our time. And you have to say it as a miracle. And never let it be said that we didn't live in the age of miracles. You know, we read about the miracle of Lazarus, who's brought back to life. We are experiencing the miracle of Israel being brought back to life. Israel was dead. It is now resurrected. Israel was lost. It is now found. We see God take a nation from oblivion, 10 tribes lost to Assyria in 701 BC. Exilement and temple destruction by the Babylonians in 606 BC. Secular and cultural mixing by the Greeks, what we call Hellenizing, in 167 BC. Scattering and dispersion by the Romans in 70 AD. Humiliation and condemnation by the Spanish Inquisition in the 14th century. Extermination by the Nazi Germany in 1945, called the Holocaust. With all of these disasters, we see God now has regathered His people. We see a repossession. We see God take this oblivious people and regather them in spite of the enormous difficulties. Jews are being gathered from all over the world. Listen to the words of the Lord in Isaiah 43, 5 and 6. Fear not, I am with thee. I will bring thy seed from the east. I will gather you from the west. I will say to the north, give them up. And I will go to the south and say, keep them not back. And Jews are being gathered from 70 different countries, speaking 70 different languages, speaking 70 different, or bringing 70 different cultures, and 70 different values, and 70 different states of belief and ideologies. They bring them all back to Israel. An interesting title of a book. I was fascinated with it. If you understand Israel, you will see the world. For Israelites are bringing world cultures all into this very small piece of real estate. They bring to Israel what they've acquired in the Gentile countries. Jews coming out of the diaspora bring with them the beliefs and the understandings and the cultures, and it's like a melting pot. Israel has now become a microcosm of the world. You know, it's interesting. When we were arranging for the Jerusalem Convention, we were talking to some of the tour operators. And we were saying that we may have anywhere from 5 to 7 different languages coming to this convention. I said, can you handle it? And it was rather interesting. The tour operators, we can handle any language in the world. He says, we got professionals all over the place. It may seem like Israel's disadvantage, but we will see in the kingdom, it will be Israel's strength, for they will know all the different parts of the world because they were there. So the diaspora, as often we think of it as negative, the Lord will turn it into positive. Jews are being regathered from Russia at the rate of 600 to 1,000 Jews daily. Now that fluctuates. It did fluctuate during the Iraqi-American War. It dropped. It fluctuated in other times. But that's the rate that they are programmed to meet the 7 million plan. They had a 5 million plan, but they adjusted it because of the tremendous number of people wanting to come to Israel. Now, since the Russian coup, which is a week ago, the exit visas increased 15%. And we see now in Ethiopia, the 35,000 Ethiopian Jews have all been moved. Have been moved from Ethiopia to Israel. I understand there's about 500 left. And maybe by now they have moved them from Ethiopia and brought all the Ethiopian Jews back to Israel. Let me say something interesting about the Ethiopian Jews, because this is not known to many people. You know it when you're there. The Ethiopian Jews claim they have the Ark of the Covenant. Now you might ask, well, how did that happen? Well, we all know about the Queen of Sheba, and we all know how she visited Solomon, and I think we know that she also married Solomon. And she stayed with Solomon, and she was converted to Judaism. And she stayed many years. When the time came for her to leave to go back to her country, she asked Solomon to give her a remembrance of her conversion. And he asked her, what would you like? And he says, I would like to have a replica of the Ark of the Covenant. And so Solomon ordered a replica of the covenant. It didn't have any gold, but it was a replica. But at that time, Solomon had private information that Assyria was gathering to invade. You know, we think of Rehoboam and Jeroboam as the time when the kingdom was split. But Solomon knew it even in advance, the problem that was occurring. And obviously, that Ark of the Covenant was all gold. And so he would be going after that Ark of the Covenant. So the theory is that what Solomon did was, instead of giving the Queen of Sheba a replica of the Ark of the Covenant, he gave her the real McCoy and left the replica in the temple, thinking that when things would calm down, he would then bring it back. And so she brought the real Ark of the Covenant down to Ethiopia, and it's down there. It's been guarded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for the past 2,500 years. Now some of you might say, that's kind of far-fetched. Because there's another theory. And the other theory is that the Ark of the Covenant is buried under the Temple Mount. And they've been digging. They've been digging in a kind of a matrix to try to find it. And the Arabs are going crazy because they went 100 meters in from Herod's Wailing Wall. And if you recall, 100 meters in is going right underneath the Dome of the Rock. And I talked to the Arab delegate who said that holy war almost broke out when they found out about that. And so they stopped it. So you got two theories as to where the Ark of the Covenant. But the key is, why don't they bring it up? And the answer is, they won't until the temple is rebuilt. When the temple is rebuilt, then they will produce the Ark. So goes the theories that are circulating in Jerusalem today. I interpret everything happening in Russia as providential. I don't emphasize the communistic demise. I don't emphasize the collapse of the Russian Empire. I think we're just seeing a temporary thing. I think what it all means to me, and I'm not so sure it means to you, but what it all means to me is God says, I want all Jews in Russia that want to go to Israel will be allowed to go. And if I have to take the Gorbachevs out, and if I have to take communism out, if I have to break them up into 15 republics or 200 republics, that's what it will take. For they'll all go back. The time has come to regather the Jews from all parts of the world, the north, the south, the east, and the west. And nothing will stop it. I do believe Gorbachev is a providential man. Very providential, as Napoleon was, to complete something in the plan of God. And right now, the plan of God is the regathering of the Jews. Nothing is going to stop it. I interpret the Iraqi American or the Iraqi 28-nation war in this context. I'll have more to say about that very shortly. But all of these scenarios in Russia, in my view, is the attempt by the Lord to keep the door open for all Jews to immigrate. And even the latest figure, which came out of the Jerusalem Post last week, 15% increased application for exit visas. Now, Jeremiah predicted 3,000 years ago, I will bring them back from the north country. The north country is Russia. And in Zephaniah 3:18-19, you'll read that very carefully. Zephaniah 3:18-19. I will gather fame in every land they have been put to shame. We'll come back to that in a moment. Because we're not talking about the people that are going there are the nobodies. They are the scientists. They are the engineers. They are the culturalists. They are the educated, the professional. I will gather fame from all of the land back to Israel. The world is waking up, incidentally, to the fame of the Jews in every land. The world is waking up. Somehow, their destiny is connected with Israel. The world senses. Somehow it can't shake off the influence of the Jews on mankind. The world senses the Jews are interwoven with mankind like a fabric. And that is true. No matter where the world turns, you encounter a Jew. If you take an aspirin, bear, a Jew gave it to you. Every time you take an aspirin, remember that. If you go to the dentist, Trabo, a Jew gave you Novocaine. If you have heart trouble, Stryker, a Jew gave you Digitalis. If you get married, Wasserman, a Jew gave you a blood test. If you get a polio shot, Salk, a Jew, provided it for you. If you're a communist, Karl Marx, a Jew, paved the way. And if you're a Catholic, incidentally, the first 33 popes of the early church were Jews. If you ask the historians, and if you ask Professor Van de Gaff, who wrote a book on the mystique of the Jews, he said there are five men who have influenced mankind through the history more than any other people. Five men. He named them. Professor Van de Gaff, a cultural anthropologist. And the five men are Albert Einstein, Karl Marx, Sigmund Freud, Charles Darwin, and Jesus Christ. Would it surprise you that 4 out of the 5 are Jews? If you are a Bible student, you live in the Bible. The Bible lives in you. You live in the world of the Jews. We are influenced by Jewish heroes. Abraham and Moses and Joshua and David and Solomon and Jesus and the prophets and the disciples and the 3,000 converts and at the Pentecost and the 50,000 converts that lived in AD 100. They were all Jewish. And Jesus said, even in John 4:22, salvation comes from the Jews. I said this last night. I think it's worth repeating. I think we're more Jewish than the Jews. And I don't mean that dietarily or in terms of the festivals or anything like that, but in terms of our orientation, in terms of our hopes, in terms of our promises. Remember, we're grafted onto the tree. The tree was not grafted onto us. We are the wild branches. Isn't that what Paul says in Romans? We are the wild branches grafted on. Now, the regathering of Jews is like a net dragging in all kinds of fish. Now, we know in categories, but it's very hard to put people in categories. 10% are orthodoxy, 16% are conservative, 20% are reform, 20% are liberals, 34% are secular Zionist or non-religious. One-third of the Israelis have no interest in religion. But the fact of the matter is that these are always simplifications, because if you really look at the ideologies, there are Jewish Christians, there are Jewish atheists, there are Jewish Zen Buddhists, Jewish Muslims, Jewish Hasidics, Jewish Sephardics, Jewish Sophurics, Jewish Kabbalists, Jewish agnostics, and so forth. I can go on and on. The ideologies is so complex that the fish dragged in from all over the world is of many kind. But the regathering is being fulfilled. And the prophecy of the two sticks. Remember the prophecy of the two sticks? Ezekiel 36, 24 and 28. It says, I will gather all of the people back to the land, and I will make them one nation. Now, if you go back in those days, the days of Jeroboam and Rehoboam, if you remember, the kingdom was divided. And the northern kingdom had the 10 tribes, and the southern kingdom had the 2. And when Assyria came in and invaded and assimilated, they were then called the 10 lost tribes. Completely assimilated. And if anyone asks you, they will come back. The seed will come back. You say, that's impossible. Ezekiel says, I will bring them back. And in the prophecy of the two sticks, putting the two sticks together, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, the Lord says, I will put both sticks together, and I will clench them with my fist. Putting the two sticks together and clenching them and holding them indicates the restored Israel, north and south, united in God's hand. And in spite of this confusion of the diversity regathering in Jerusalem, it's a miracle of our time. And I believe that Israel's time to be favored has come. Israel's double. The Mishnah is over. And when God said in Jeremiah 16, 13, 15, I will cast you out of the land where I will not show you favor. I will recompense your sin double. But now we see that this double is over. Now, what motivates the regathering? especially since I said one third of them are secular Jews, and many of them atheists, agnostics. Let me cite just a few reasons why. First, economic survival. It's no secret that the world is struggling economically, and the Jews are moving to Israel to better their economic status. And they're going to other countries, no question about it, but they are also seeing Israel as a big opportunity. Second reason, political stability or instability. The Jews are sick and tired of being kicked out of every country. They've wandered long enough. And I remember talking to a dentist there in Jerusalem. He had a very successful practice in New York. I mean, where else can you be more successful? Maybe Jackson? Successful practice. Gave it all up. Started in Jerusalem. I says, why? He says, I want to see Israel succeed. I'm sick and tired of wandering around or having my brethren wander around. That's a motivation, by the way. I could tell you cases upon cases. The third reason, anti-Semitism, escape. The Jews are experiencing a new and increased episodes of anti-Semitic incidents. I'll come back to this in a minute because this is very important. The fourth reason is the messianic promises, especially to the orthodoxy. Some believe, it's a very small group, but there's a small group that still believe in the return of the Messiah, but it's a small group. And therefore they come and say, when the Messiah comes, he will come in Jerusalem. In fact, they got the track. They got exactly where he's going to come down. He's going to come down the Palm Sunday Road down in the Mount of Olives and go right across the Kidron Valley up to the Golden Gates. And they even have that well defined. And the fifth reason is to be far away from atheistic communism. Reason? The Jews feel that they will become the scapegoat for what is happening in Russia. I'll come back to that in a minute because I think that's very important. Now there you have five reasons why they are motivated to regathering into Israel. Economic survival, political instability, anti-Semitic escape, new interest in the messianic promises, and protection from the communistic backlash, which will come about. But God's time clock continues to tick and ring. And the countdown has happened. So I'm going to quickly take you from an early period and we'll bring it up as to what this countdown has been. And then we're going to flip into the future and see where that takes us. And I'll make some comments along the way. We did mention already that the Mishnah is over. It was over in 1878. Now, why 1878? Because in 1878 was the Berlin Congress of Nations, where Jews from all over the world met in Berlin to encourage the settlement in Palestine, and literally 15 Russian Jews settle in the first kibbutz called the Pitatifka. That's 1878. And so we see after the Mishnah, bango, the first ring of the clock. The second ring of the clock was in 1896 when Herzl publishes the Jewish state as a result of anti-Semitism in Europe. And so Herzl becomes the first president of Zion. But I want to say something interesting about Theodor Herzl. Originally, Herzl had nothing in mind about regathering of the Jews in Palestine. This is exactly what he had in mind. The anti-Semitism in Vienna and in Europe was so strong And he being an assimilated Jew, a very successful lawyer in Vienna, he wanted to stop the anti-Semitism. He went to the Catholic Church to get them to help him reduce anti-Semitism. And he said to the church, if you will help me reduce anti-Semitism, I will help convert every Jew to Catholicism. Did the Catholics help him? No, they did not. And so Herzl then said, the only answer to the Jewish question was a homeland. And thus wrote the white paper, which has now become a very famous document. The next ring was 1903. Perhaps some of you may be aware, perhaps you're not. But the Jews knew they could not get Palestine because the Ottoman Turks had it. Now, if you remember the Ottoman Turks, they were emperors for hundreds of years. Who's going to kick them out of Palestine? And so they come up with an alternate plan. Let's go down to Uganda and start a state of Israel in Uganda. Brother Russell heard about it. And Brother Russell wrote several letters to Jewish leaders discouraging them for the use of Uganda as the homeland of the Jews. And it worked. Rather interesting. The Ottoman Empire, which was squatting over Palestine, nobody could move it. They're gone. And Israel is in. Fourth ring of the clock was in 1917, the Balfour Declaration. We all know about that. The British said, go ahead, go in. The land is yours to settle. But they changed their mind. The British changed their mind. They got caught up with the Arab fever and oil. And it's rather interesting. Because they reversed their decision, the British Empire began to sink. And if you look at the map, during this period, England owned half the world. Remember they were pink in the map? Remember the world geography? They were pink. If you look at pink now in the world map, you see one little island, which then fulfills the prophecy in Genesis 12:3. I will bless them that bless thee, and I will curse them that curse thee. Fifth ring of the clock was 1925. When Hebrew University opened up its doors to the development of its young people. And all over the world, people came to Hebrew University. A university preserves and perpetuates its knowledge and its culture. And we now see in retrospect that Hebrew University, with 40,000 students, were mostly responsible for the 500,000 archaeological artifacts that have been found since 1925. Many of them confirming the Book of Books. Sixth ring of the clock was in 1945, when the Holocaust victims were discovered. 6 million Jews were killed. It awakened and sobered the world for the need of the Jewish state. The fishers and the hunters of Jeremiah 16:16 forced the Jews out of the woodwork, so to speak. Cultural assimilation is not possible. And the wandering Jew saw the Jewish homeland as the only answer. Seventh ring in 1948. This was a big ring, friends. A big ring in 1948. Three things happened. Israel was a nation. The time of the Gentiles was over, and the regathering of the Jews from all over the world began to accelerate. Prior to 1948, there was immigration and there was settlement, but it really didn't accelerate until they became a country. It was a time when God took Ezekiel in the chapter 37. Remember that in the Valley of the Dry Bones? And if you could picture a valley full of bones, all kinds of bones, all kinds of mixed bones. And God took Ezekiel to this valley, and he said, "Son of man, can these bones come to life?" And if you could picture Ezekiel, the son of man, listening to the Lord and looking at all these bones, his response says, "Lord, only you know." And God said, "Watch." And there was a shaking, and there was a vibration, and all the bones began to gather some life. And then they began to move. The leg bones moved to the hip bone, and the hip bone moved to the shoulder bone, which together moved to the head bones, and we had a whole flock of skeletons. Now, if you were Ezekiel, I think you would see quite a sight. And they were all still shaking. And it was a shaking. And remember that shaking, because God says, "I will shake the nations." Don't lose these words. They are very deliberately given by the Lord. "I will shake the nations." And he was shaking these bones. What he was saying is, "I'm going to shake the nations to give these bones up." And then all of a sudden came the sinew, the flesh, and then the skin. And then the valley of dry bones became a valley of people. We believe the bones represent the 12 tribes of Israel. Not the two, but the 12. In the diaspora. And the shaking represents the seven trumpets sounding. Bones with bones represents regathering. The sinew and the muscles represents the strength of their hope. And the flesh represents the return of the Jewish culture and their community. And the skin represents the protection given to the regathered Jew in Israel. Breath has not come, in my view. And my suggestion to you, breath will not come until the Lord is ready to make a new covenant with Israel. Eighth ring of the clock was in 1954. 1954 was a very significant date because Stalin, you remember Stalin, he announced a Jewish state in Berel-Bidzin. Berel-Bidzin is a state in Siberia, Russia, about the size of New Jersey. Stalin brought all of the Communistic Party together, the Presidium, they were all regathered, and he announced all Jews were to go to Berel-Bidzin. Well, this was shocking. Molotov, if you remember, was his prime minister. He said, "All Jews?" You see, his wife was Jewish. He said, "All Jews." The general of the army, I forgot his name, is one of these great big long ones. He says, "If you move all the..." Incidentally, his wife was Jewish too. He says, "If you move all the Jews to Berel-Bidzin, I will resign from the Communistic Party." He took his card, his Communistic card, and he threw it on the table at Stalin. Stalin grabbed a hold of the card and threw it back to him. He says, "You'll give me that card when I ask for it." And the moment that happened, Stalin was seized with a brain stroke. He never recovered and was dead in 2 weeks. Everybody can propose what they want to do with the Jews, but God has his plan. God stopped Stalin in 1954 with a massive brain stroke, which brought about the death of his proposal. And when now we see the Jews are being regathered, they're coming out of Russia because that's where most of them were, because of they were sent to the north, if you recall, during the Russian dispersion. Another ring of the clock was in 1967. When Jerusalem in total became the capital of Israel. Don't treat this lightly, friends. Jerusalem being the capital of Israel. Jerusalem becoming the capital. It's a preliminary, as I see it, and I think you do too, it's a preliminary becoming the capital of the world. Remember on Isaiah 2, 3 to 4, for out of Zion will go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. But powerful things are happening in Jerusalem since 1967. Jerusalem has become the target of most nations. The Muslim nations, all of the Arab nations, India, Pakistan, Turkey, Africa, several Russian Muslim republics, they want Jerusalem because of the Temple Mount. The issue with the Arabs, they say they want land. Don't believe it, friends. They got plenty of desert out there. What they want is Jerusalem. They want to put a Muslim flag over the Temple Mount. And they won't stop at anything to do it. The Christian nations want Jerusalem as an international city because of the holy sites. I'll come back to that in a moment. The Jews with the Jewish diaspora want Jerusalem because of its symbolic quality as a political restoration. Sharon, the housing commissioner, has publicly declared the Jerusalem area is going from about 550,000 people. They're going to go up to 1 million people. And he's already got the plan, and they're building houses all over the place. Interesting to note that right after World War I, the League of Nations considered locating themselves in Jerusalem. And right after 1948, interesting to note that the United Nations wanted to make Jerusalem an international city. Even the Pope asked for Jerusalem to be an international city. We raise questions about these notions. The discussion seemed to be leading to principles that the nations want to be in league with God. The nations somehow want to be aligned with God. The nations sense somehow that connection with God is in the connection with Jerusalem. If they can connect with Jerusalem, they can connect with God. The next ring of the clock was in 1987 when the Russian Jews were allowed to immigrate to Israel. They have been pouring into the rate of 600 to 1,000, which we mentioned, and they've been moved to the 7 million plan. And this is a unique fulfillment because in 1987 is when the acceleration occurred. It's a unique fulfillment of Jeremiah 31:8, which says, I will bring them back from the north country. And Zephaniah 3:18, I will gather those with fame. Let's take the 11th ring of the clock, 1991, that's this year right now, with the interim peace process that will occur next month, October. Israel has wanted peace since 1948. That's about 43 years old. Five wars and a Scud missile has been their experiences. Five Arab nations and many other cooperating nations want peace as well. Russia and the United States have banded together to co-sponsor the peace process. Bush is serious about settling the Israel-Arab conflict. Shamir, the long-known hawk, the one who's always refused, has already been smitten with moderation. Why? Now, friends, I'm expressing my opinions and my suggestions. There's two basic reasons. As far as Israel's concerned, they want $10 billion from the United States. They need it desperately. But from the Lord's standpoint, And to me, that's always been my guiding principle. It has always answered any of the dilemmas that I see in the world events. The Lord says, I want that regathering to continue until all Jews are down in Israel. And I believe the interim peace process will happen, but it'll be temporary. It'll be temporary. It's like, what's the American term? A stall to permit many more to come in. And so the peace process will go for a while, but then it will end. It is not the peace that we find in 1 Thessalonians 4:3, when they shall say peace and safety, then there will be sudden destruction. Nor is it the peace that we find in Ezekiel 38, where it says they will be living in unwalled villages. We believe that to be next. This is just an interim peace process so that we can go on with those two things: to keep Israel economically surviving, and also to permit the regathering to continue. Let's take the 12th ring of the clock, and now we're talking about the future. Future wars will occur. Remember, the text that says, Jeremiah 30:3-7, all her lovers will leave her. Well, Israel's got some lovers. Why not? And so we feel that something has got to happen between now and then for this to happen. We'll give you some other reasons why, but future wars will occur. Now, you might say, what would be the causes of these wars? Let me suggest some. Regathering of the land is still a sensitive thing with the Arabs, so it might still be the basis of a war. Second, land expansion. Yes, as the Russians keep coming in, and also there's others too, more and more settlements. And more settlements will only make sensitivities and therefore open strife. Number three, there is a command in Ezekiel 11:16-18, that God wants the Jews to remove all detestable things. The mosque on the Temple Mount is a detestable thing to the Orthodoxy. They want it removed. And every once in a while, you'll find one of these very aggressive and exotic Orthodoxy with a bomb running right for the mosque. And they stop them just in time. So the rebuilding of the Temple Mount might be also a cause for a future war. Friends, right now, as you and I are sitting here, there is active plans to rebuild the temple. Every year, once a year, full-page ads taken out of the New York Times for funding. They even got the calculation of how much it will cost. I think it's going to run roughly $1 billion. They're collecting treasures. I believe they got 38 identified artifacts that will go into the temple. So there's a plan. And to add to that, they got the two groups that will man the temple, the Kohens and the Levites. Incidentally, if you're not familiar with the word the Kohens, they believe that the Kohens are direct descendants from Moses. So the Kohens and the Levites are regathering from all parts of the world, and they're going through seminars and training to prepare for the ministry of the temple. Water scarcity is another cause of these wars, because in the Middle East, water is scarce like you never believed. And finally, the making of Jerusalem into an international city by the UN and by the Pope. Don't ignore that move, friends. We're talking about the future. The Pope has said he wants Jerusalem an international city. And I think last night we identified how the Pope has influenced Poland, which was the spark in the shipyard labor union, and which got Gorbachev to throw gasoline, and we think that's how it got started. And it was all behind the scenes, and we think this is what's going to happen again. We think the Pope is not dead on this issue. He wants Jerusalem an international city. And he's going to do all kinds of things to do that. If you ask what motivates the Pope, well, they've got all kinds of religious Catholic memorial sites there. Let's take the 13th ring of the clock, which is still future, and that is peace will come. Israel will enjoy a period of peace and safety. This must happen to meet Ezekiel 38. And it's during this peaceful state that the great spoil will develop. Now, we've had all kinds of conjectures as to what that spoil is. Some have said it's the food, the oil, the cattle, and the diamonds. The diamonds is the third largest city in Israel right now. The third largest industry. The first industry is electronics. The second, which may surprise you, is flowers. They distribute flowers to all over the world. And the third is diamonds. But we see three possibilities of the spoil. One, we think the Jewish intellectual, the Russian intellectual, coming down, being released from Russia. The human spoil, human capital. Zephaniah 3:18 says, I will gather fame from every land and from the north. So we think maybe Jewish intellectuals might be the spoil, because they're leaving Russia and causing some problems over there. The second possibility is high technology and some new worldwide economic product. Israel has not become number one in all of these technologies, but they've got such a high per capita collection of scientists than any other country in the world. They're bound to make a breakthrough before too long. And if the Lord wants them to make a breakthrough, Israel can become like Japan. Small as it is, can become a leader. Let's take the 14th ring of the clock is when Israel is alone. Truly alone, according to Jeremiah 30:11-15. All her lovers will leave her. Something will happen in which the United States will leave or abandon Israel. Now, some of you might say, that's impossible, because we're so connected with Israel. I mean, we got a large percentage of our senators are Jewish. And also the House of Representatives. And we're committed. So some of you might say that this is not possible. But the scriptures say all her lovers will leave her. Not her enemies will leave her, because they already left her. But her lovers. And who are our lovers? The United States is one, I think. England and France and some of the other countries too. Europe has been very sympathetic and has been trading. All of them will leave. Now, what will cause this isolation? Let me suggest some. First, the regathering settlements from all over the world is upsetting everybody, especially the United States and England, for that matter, too. They want the settlements stopped. So the settlements are alienating the Western countries. Second, individual anti-Semitism will become national anti-Semitism. Reason? Anti-Semitism, by definition, is a perpetual hatred for the Jews. Those exact words of Ezekiel 35:5-15. But they've been with individuals, your neighbors, your friends, your workers. But it will change from individual to national. It will be government opposition, government policy. Let me give an example. As the Russian glasnost and perestroika gave communism more freedom for Russia, the old anti-Semitic hatred for Jews began to emerge. Why? Because they gave the Russian Orthodoxy Church freedom. And it's the Russian Orthodoxy Church that has preached over the years that Jews are God killers. Not Christ killers, but God killers. Now, why do they say that? Because they believe in the Trinity. And you see, killing Christ was like killing God, according to the Russian Orthodoxy. So the incidents, anti-Semitic incidents in Russia, is beginning to escalate. And we believe that the Russian Orthodoxy Church will make a connection with the government, and thus anti-Semitism will move from an individual basis to a national basis, and with that national basis, they will then withdraw their support from Israel and thus become, or thus allow the lovers to leave her. Incidentally, the Russian Orthodoxy have a special reason for perpetuating anti-Semitism, is because historically, the 15 Bolshevists who stormed the Tsar's palace during the 1916 revolution were Jews. And so the communists are looking for a scapegoat. They want to blame somebody for the mess that they're in. Now, so far, they've been blaming the leaders. If you've been watching the television news, they're pulling down the statues. Lenin is coming down. The head of this is coming down. The head of that. They're pulling them down. Once they're all down, they're going to be looking for other people. There's a third reason for the Israeli isolation. It's the world's discontent emerging. We haven't talked too much about the Lord's great army. That's already been spoken over the podium in Joel 2:11. We now know that the basic reason for discontent throughout the world, which will cause governments to overturn, is economic. Why? Food on the table. Jobs to support families. The communistic upheaval of the past few years is really an economic upheaval. The people are fed up with ideologies, political ideologies. They're more interested in food on the table. It's rather interesting, because if you study world history from time immemorial, politics always drove the economics. Today, we are witnessing the reverse. Economics is driving the politics. Now, it's rather interesting study that I went through just recently about this peasant Mexican farmer just outside city of the Mexico City, a poor farmer, and he has this little shack with just one little light bulb coming down and a dirt floor and just an old bed, and he cooked on this old fireplace. And the study went on to say how he was a very happy peasant farmer. He was always singing. He was always greeting people. He was always happy. He heard about television, so he bought a small television. He put it in the corner of this little peasant farm. He put it in the corner of the room. And he began to see the programs. His favorite program, would you believe it, was the Golden Girls. And he looked at that program. He says, is that the way the people live in the world? And he compared it to his lifestyle. And all of a sudden, he never sang again. He never was happy. He wanted that lifestyle. And the study went on to conclude how many of the under-affluent, the poor, are seeing what the haves have. And they want what the haves have. And we have it now as an economic force in the world. That's the big force in the world today. It's not a political force. It's an economic force of the have-nots want what the haves have. And if we look at the figures, we'll be appalled. 700 million people living on $150 a year. They are the poor. 2.5 billion. Add that to that, half food, but nothing more. That's 3.5 billion. The remaining, which is 1.7 billion, are the halves. And so you have the world is divided politically into 159 nations, but economically it's divided into two parts, the have and the have-nots. And the have want the have what the haves have, and the have-nots, excuse me, send it around. The have-nots want what the haves have, and the haves want to hang on with what they have. Whew, got through that. The fourth reason. I'm surprised nobody has said to me, pause. We're still in good shape, right? Okay. Fourth reason for Israel's isolation will be the smiting of the Jordan. Now, we mentioned that last night, and so I'm not going to go through that. But I will just remind you that smiting of the Jordan will occur. And it's going to occur during this period of after the lovers leave her. And so we see the church and the great company class, Elijah and Elisha, moving in that direction. And I'm not going to take any time to do that. Meanwhile, then Gog's invasion of Israel from the north will be the 15th ring of the clock. Now, some of the people are saying, communism is going out. Don't count communism out. It may come back and may come back in a different package. Because what's behind communism is really certain kinds of people who want to dominate the lives of other people. We used to call that fascism and totalitarianism. So it'll come out in a different package. But I do want to say this. It's true that Russia is breaking up, but I have seen Azerbaijani and some of the others, Armenia, they have such a high proportion or a high percentage of Muslims in their country. In fact, as I've seen it, Azerbaijan has more in common with Iran than it has with Russia. So it's conceivable that the Gog of the North will be someone tied in with the Muslim religion. Because the Muslim religion is what really is the aggressive, violent group. The Ayatollah tells its members, go out and kill, and you'll go to heaven. What an easy way to do it. Remember the Rushdie in his book. Anybody who kills him goes to heaven. And so they've got this violence built into their religious precepts. Let's take the 17th and the last ring of the clock. No, the 16th. The no rain prediction that occurs in Zechariah 14, 16 to 21. When Gog invades, we all know that as Jacob's trouble. And we all know that they'll come down into Jerusalem. And we know there will be killing. And we know there will be a remnant. There'll be a remnant that comes from that invasion. It's that remnant that's important. Because the remnant will be the basis of the acceptance of the Messiah. Now, there's all kinds of speculation as to what will cause the remnant to accept the Messiah. But the scriptures is clear that the Lord will pour his spirit on the remnant. And it's the remnant that he will use to bring about the reordering. And it's at this time, the 17th and last ring of the clock, where the ancient worthies will then come on the scene. It's not clear to me, maybe it's clear to you, whether it'll be right after Jacob's trouble and just before the inauguration of the kingdom in its earthly phase, or whether it'll be during Jacob's trouble, either at the very last phase or just after. It's not clear, but somewhere in there, the ancient worthies will appear. But I feel very strong that they will not come back as Abraham, Moses. They will come back as statesmen. No one will know them as such. They will be incognito. They will be great statesmen, and they will be coming out with great solutions to world problems, and they will solve all these problems, not because they are brilliant, but because the church is in glory. The church is complete. The church, the marriage of the church has happened, and the New Jerusalem is now working with these great statesmen and giving the solutions to the problems of the world through the ancient worthies just after the Jacob's trouble, and thus we have the Lord's kingdom in operation. Let me just conclude with this statement as the questions come up. Watch Israel. Keep your eyes on Jerusalem. Listen to the rings of the clock. They're in a countdown for the great spectacular for the kingdom of God is coming. And may we hasten and complete our development and preparation to help God with the great work of the kingdom. I wanted these questions written so that I could read them, so it will go into the tape. And the yellow one first has been asked. Will there be a war before Armageddon? And again, George, as we said earlier, these are going to be my opinions. I believe there will be. I believe there will be future wars to bring about this, all her lovers will leave her. And thus, what are the bases? I gave you all the reasons why. Regathering, expansion of the land. Israel is not in all of the land that's been promised her. The water rights. The Jordan right now is so sensitive. There's not enough water coming out of the Jordan, and even that's being diverted. The Euphrates River has almost had a war 2 years ago when Turkey was damming it up and preventing the water to go down to Syria and Iraq. So water may be another possibility. The settlements is another possibility, and also the rebuilding of the temple and everything that's on the Temple Mount can be possibility. So I would answer this, will there be a war before? Yes, there will be wars, but they will not be the Armageddon size and the Armageddon scope. Incidentally, I want to say something about Armageddon. When Armageddon happens, it will happen in Russia. For years, I felt it would happen in the United States. Why? Because we got more laws than anywhere, and anarchy is lawlessness. In fact, that was rather interesting to read about Vice President Quayle. Vice President Quayle had said that the United States, the population of the United States, is only 5% of the world. But they got 70% of the world's lawyers. So those are the possibilities. Another question. What is the importance of Jerusalem becoming an international city? Well, the Pope wants the international city, but it wants it Catholic. It wants it Christian. The Muslims want an international, but they want it Muslim. And the Jews want Jerusalem, but they want it Judaic. Mayor Kallik has said so many times that Jerusalem is a Jewish city, but we invite all religions in the world to come. Everybody wants the city to have their own label. But we believe, the scriptures is clear, that Jerusalem belongs to the Jews. It doesn't belong to the Catholics, and it doesn't belong to the Muslims, and it doesn't belong to the Americans. It belongs to the Jews. And that's where it will be. And it will be governed by the ancient worthies, but behind it all, the new Jerusalem that will be working through it. There's three questions on this sheet. I'll just take one more.
You think that if Yeltsin gets ascendancy over Gorbachev, the Jewish visas will stop due to his anti-Semitism. That's a good possibility. But I believe that the Gog that we are to experience in the invasion may not be on the scene yet. I don't think Gorbachev is. Gorbachev is a nice guy. He's too nice to be Gog. The Gog we're looking for has got to be another Stalin. Ruthless, no respect for life, and a hatred for the Jews. Stalin hated the Jews so much, he was ready to send them to Berbizon. So consequently, Gog is yet. Now, if Yeltsin could be Gog, but he hasn't tipped his hand too much about his ideology. He likes democracy. If he likes democracy, it's not likely he'll be a Gog unless he turns face. So if Yeltsin is not the Gog, Gog is yet to appear on the scene. Here's another one. When do you believe that the third temple will be built? I'm glad that question came out because I haven't had a chance to comment on it. The third temple. If you ask the Orthodox Jews, which I did in Jerusalem, they are expecting to build the third temple, but they are expecting to build it after the order of Herod's second temple, not the third temple of Ezekiel. So they don't have that in mind. I don't have anybody thinking about the Ezekiel third temple. But they are thinking about the temple as it was in the days of Herod. But I believe, in response to the question, that the third temple will be built. It will be literal. Now some of you say, well, you mean the altars? They're going to have altars there? They're going to sacrifice animals? No, they're not going to sacrifice animals. That's all done away with. There's no more need for sacrifice. But the third temple will be built as a memorial, like a museum. How many times you go in a museum and you look at all the items, you say, this is the way it was 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago. You say, oh, that's the way they did it. And that's what Ezekiel's temple will be like. It will be a museum. It will collect artifacts of the biblical history and pull them all in so that the people will go through all of the world, will go down to Ezekiel's third temple and see it and enjoy it and relive those experiences of the past. Question. How close are we to Jacob's... The pile grows. How close are we to Jacob's trouble? You want the day, the hour, and the minute? If I have to venture my own guess, I'd say between 5 and 15 years. And those of you who have a checklist of all the things that must happen before it happens, you know, this has got to happen, this has got to happen, this has got to happen. Of course, they will all happen. But our problem is we don't believe that they can happen quick. Look what happened in the past year, in 1 year. The German wall was knocked down. In 1 year, German reunification. In 1 year, the acceleration of the Russian Jewish immigration. In 1 year, the demise of the communistic empire. In 1 year, we see independent republics declaring their independency from Russia. I think we're up to, 7 or 8 that won independency, and we'll probably get a lot more. But they may shift back into some loose confederation. So don't get hung up that there are many things that got to happen that takes time. It could happen quick. The Lord will just crank it out. How close? 5 to 15 years. Will the possession of the Dead Sea with its billions of dollars of mineral resources play a part in the future development? One of my very closest friends in Jerusalem, who happens to be the deputy director under the mayor of Jerusalem. I had lunch with him just before I came back, And we chatted about this. And I asked him, what has happened to the project of moving the Mediterranean water from the Mediterranean Sea down to the Dead Sea and the construction of the hydroelectric dam? And he said, well, the project has been abandoned. I says, abandoned? How come? He says, too expensive. I says, look, I says, with all these Russian immigrants that you got here and you can't find jobs to them, why don't you put them to work making this dam? And he looked at me. He says, you know, that's an idea. He says, let me take it from there. So when I get back in April, I'm going to ask him that same question. But the first big need is not minerals or resources. The big need is water. And I think they could do that from the Mediterranean. They could purify it as well as get hydroelectric power. I think the Dead Sea will play a big part in the future. Why do you feel that the statesmen, ancient worthies, will come back incognito? Isn't the resurrection of the ancient worthies one of the first works of the mediatorial reign? Yes, it is one of the first works. And the question really is, why should they be incognito? Well, the problem is we're not quite sure whether it's just during the Jacob's trouble or just after, and the role it has with the remnant. We really can't see that closely. I mean, there's so many things that are happening then. And we do see something else happening, and that is the Lord will grant His Spirit to the remnant. The Spirit will be given to the remnant. And once that Spirit is given, they are then going to say, we want the Messiah. They will recognize Jesus as the Messiah. So, we believe then that they may come before that time, you see. If they come before that time and be recognized as Abraham and so forth, they might think of them as loonies. I mean, suppose you were in Jerusalem, some say, I'm Abraham. What would you think? So it's important that the remnant first have the alignment with God, that they recognize and waiting for the Messiah, and thus comes these. And then when they first come, they'll begin to recognize it. The questions grow. Just what is the Temple Mount and why do the Arabs want it? The Temple Mount, which is on the eastern side of the old city in Jerusalem, is the remnant or the ruins of where Solomon's temple was located. But more than that, it is the site where Jesus was crucified and buried. More than that, it was the site, it's the site of all of the various events and scenarios that have happened in the Bible. Now, I found a text, an interesting text about the Kidron Valley. Now, those of you who have been to Jerusalem, you know where the Kidron Valley. The Kidron Valley will be a holy valley. Now, some of you say, well, you mean it's a cemetery. Is that what you mean? No. It will be a memorial park. The Lord is preserving the Kidron Valley for future generations in the kingdom. Now, what is in that Kidron Valley? First and most important is the Mount of Olives. And also Gethsemane. And also the Golden Gate. And also all of those various important events that have occurred in the life of Jesus. They are being preserved, friends. They are being preserved for the millions of people who will be resurrected, and they will go be visiting in Jerusalem to gather the important history that occurred at that time. So the Temple Mount is important because it's symbolic of not only the various religions, but the religion who is there feel that they're connected with God. Didn't a fundamentalist Muslim attempt to assassinate Pope John Paul? In connection with his desire to make Jerusalem an international city? I don't know. I have not heard of that, so I'm sorry I cannot answer that question about a Muslim attempting to assassinate the Pope. I wouldn't be surprised. Isn't Tel Aviv the capital of Israel? No. Tel Aviv was the capital of Israel. Prior to 1967, it was the capital of Israel. But after that 67 war, Jerusalem became the capital, and it will remain the capital. And when the Arabs say they're going to throw every Israeli to the sea, the Israelis say over every dead body. For they'll hang on to Jerusalem as a matter of life and death. Ezekiel 39:12, and 7 months shall the house of Israel be bearing of them, that they may clear the land. Explain. This is after the invasion of Gog. Gog will come down with its armies, and they're going to invade, and there's going to be a great disaster. Not that Israel would inflict that disaster, but God is going to inflict that disaster. And so a great disaster will occur, and the scriptures is clear. I think it's something like 84% of the invading army will be destroyed. Now, friends, you think about that for a moment. You know, think of about an army coming in and 84% being destroyed. Well, being destroyed doesn't mean they'll vaporize. It means they'll be killed, and they're laying there. And they'll be laying there seven months unburied. And they've got to be cleansed for the cleansing of the land. Number two says, will nuclear energy be used to cause the last war? Absolutely not. The key ingredient in nuclear bombs is plutonium. You know what the half-life of plutonium is? You know what we mean by half-life? Once the bomb has been exploded, the radiation that continues on, because it has now been altered in its state, it's 530 years. Can you imagine bombs being exploded in the Middle East and 530 years no one will be able to go near that? Doesn't make sense. Will the ancient worthies be confined to do their work? Confined to do their work out of Israel, or will it be throughout the world? I believe it'll be in Israel. I don't believe they'll be traveling to Washington. I don't believe they'll be traveling to London. They will be in Israel. And if you look at Ezekiel, the chapter 47 Ezekiel, there is a correlation between the temple, Ezekiel's temple, and the New Jerusalem of Revelation 21. The gates of the New Jerusalem is coincident with the gates of Ezekiel 47. There is a correlation suggesting that these gates are the ancient worthies, which means they'll be the interface between the ruling spiritual Christ and the ruling powers on earth. And so consequently, I don't believe that they'll be traveling. I think somebody, Len, talked about the best form of government is republics. The republics is a concept in which all nations will be recognized as separate nations, but they'll be brought together. And I believe, and I think this is the way it's going to happen, and again, this is a suggestion, friends, that in the resurrection, we're all going to be the same in the sense that the Polish will come back Polish, the blacks will come out black, the English will come back English, the Italians will come back English, the nation of America will... The
check back, Paul.
But as the kingdom begins to progress, little by little there'll be changes. Maybe not little by little, but the changes will be made. And the republic form of governments will begin to disappear. Last question. Is there any group in Israel today that you feel will be those remnant that pray to God at Israel's fall? Or will these be relatively unknown? It's a small group of orthodoxy right now that want Israel to collapse. Now, I've got to explain why. They are those orthodoxy. It's a very small group. It's not the dominant group. It's a very small group that want the Messiah to put them together as a nation. Not the Zionist. You see, it's the Zionist that brought them together, and they don't feel this is proper. And so, they still pray that the Messiah will come. Well, thank you, friends. I like I said earlier, it's a great presumption for me to think I really got the answers to these. But we all accept the fact that we're Bible students and we continue to study what's going on around us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we could continue here perhaps for another half hour. But due to the tapes and everything, we will have to cut it off here. Before we close, we'd like to read the songs of the night. We ask Tony here to read it for us from the at this time. Tony?
Our song of the night for today, September 1st, comes from 1 Corinthians 13:13. Now abideth faith, hope, love. These three, but the greatest of these is love. The comments. It seems impossible to describe love, this wonderful quality, without which nothing is acceptable in the sight of God. The apostle does not attempt to define love, but contents himself with giving us some of its manifestations. Those who possess a love with such characteristics are able to appreciate it, but not able otherwise to explain it. The fact is that love, like life and light, is difficult to define, and our best endeavors is to comprehend it are along the lines of its effects. It is of God. It is godlikeness in the heart. It's godlikeness in the tongue, in the hands, in the thoughts, supervising all the human attributes and seeking to control them. Where love is lacking, the results are more or less evil. Where love is present, the results differ according to the degree of love and are proportionately good.